This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Gene Purcell. Moving to a new place means finding the grocery store, the post office, and getting to know new neighbors.
It can also mean learning new folk tales. In today's Wisconsin Life, writer Alex Bledsoe tells us about the creatures he encountered after moving to Wisconsin.
I grew up in a small town in West Tennessee. And when I say small, I mean it. 300 people, 200 of whom were related to me in one way or the other. The place wasn't in any way notable. The closest thing was a town 5 miles away that celebrated the strawberry every spring with a festival and parade. Being allergic to strawberries meant it was never my favorite holiday. Now, I live in a town famous for trolls. Not the internet kind, the folklore kind. You can find them all over town, carved out of wood by local artist Michael Feeney. The town, well, technically it's a village, embraces them to the point that they have maps of the Trollway for tourists that show you where all the trolls are located. Although I'm from West Tennessee, my father's family came from Appalachia, descended from the Scotch-Irish settlers that moved there back in colonial times. To this day, if you go to Jonesboro, Tennessee for the National Storytelling Festival, which you should because it's cool, you'll find Bledsoes thick on the ground. So my background of fairy tales was the typical English Celtic stuff mixed liberally, irony intended, with stories from the Bible. My new home, though, in Mount Horeb, was settled by Norwegians 150 years ago, and that Scandinavian influence is still, to reuse a term, thick on the ground. The trolls are only one of the town's folkloric creatures. Nordic dragons line the tops of the Chamber of Commerce building and the restored train station depot. The dragons have long tongues and protuberances that look like mustaches drooping from the sides of their mouths. It's not hard to envision them as figureheads on Viking ships. Once, out of curiosity, I tracked down these dragons to Little Norway, where the Norwegian house and exhibit from the 1893 World's Fair has been relocated. Identical dragons line the roof and eaves of the house, and the owner, Scott Winner, kindly showed me the wooden template he used to replace the old dragons when the Wisconsin weather got the better of them. That same template had once been loaned to the local high school shop class to make the dragons you can now see in town. And that's something I adore about this place and its people, that pride in their myths and folklore. As a fantasy writer, I trade in that sort of thing. And to live among people who don't look down at it is marvelous. In my Tennessee hometown, I was always considered weird and strange. But here among the trolls and dragons, I'm welcome.
Alex Bledsoe is the author of many books, including the Eddie LaCrosse novels and Wisp of a Thing, part of the TUFA series.
Wisconsin Life is produced by Erica Janik. This episode was produced in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. For more information, visit our website at wisconsinlife.org and find us on Facebook.
Here to tell us more about fitting in here in Wisconsin and his writing is Alex Bledsoe. Alex, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So you feel like you fit in Mount Horeb. Tell us a little more about what it was like for a Tennessee Bledsoe to find his home in Mount Horeb.
Well, as you can imagine, the first thing to get used to was the weather, which is almost the complete opposite of what I grew up with in the South.
Especially today.
Yeah, I mean, we had really long summers and really short winters, so everything's backwards here, which means that I immediately put on about 15 pounds after moving up here. I also blame the beer and the cheese for that. Everything else, though, is really kind of similar. I mean, small towns are a lot alike, you know, wherever you go. And everybody here just really, really welcomed me. We immediately, you know, bonded with our neighbors, my kids. There's lots of kids in our neighborhood, so the kids have lots of people to play with. And there's a bookstore here in town that's kind enough to keep all my books in stock, so that's reassuring if nothing else. And it's just been a wonderful thing.
Let's talk about the life of a fantasy writer, and actually let's start talking about what it is that you write. You describe yourself as someone who writes fantasy, and for those who might not be familiar with that genre, tell us a little bit about it.
Well, I write, there's two different approaches to fantasy. One is the what they call high fantasy, the castles and dragons and swords and things like that. And I do write about those. My Eddie LaCrosse books are set in that kind of world. I also write a series about a race of Irish fairies who have ended up in Appalachia in the modern day, and they kind of blend in with everybody else there, and they play country music, and that's another kind of fantasy. You hear about that, you know. It's kind of like urban fantasy, except it's rural fantasy the way I do it.
So tell me about being a writer and being attracted to fantasy. I mean, you could write about anything. Why this?
Well, I think that kind of goes back to being the odd kid living in the small town. You get drawn into things like the fantasy and science fiction genres because they allow you to have kind of a way out. You can have kind of an inner life that's different from your exterior life. So you like reading about that stuff. And then when you realize you want to write, that's naturally what you gravitate toward writing.
You mentioned how your Appalachian heritage influenced at least some of your work. Is Wisconsin starting to creep in at all?
Well, I got to live here a little bit longer, I think, before I'm going to be brave enough to set something in Wisconsin. But yeah, I mean, I'm absorbing things all the time. The irony is, in my first Eddie LaCrosse book, I used Wisconsin town names for the towns in his world because some of them were sounded a little strange and a
Which
little
ones?
Otherworldly. And then at the time, I was living in Tennessee with no idea that I would ever actually be living in Wisconsin. So there's a little irony in that.
And the great thing about a lot of Wisconsin names is they're difficult to pronounce and they look very exotic, even though they may not be so much.
I got to ask, do you remember which town names you used as fantasy settings?
My favorite is Poissippi.
Oh yeah.
I saw that and I didn't believe that was an actual town name, which is no insult to the people of Poissippi, who I'm sure are wonderful people. But from somebody who's not from the area and not familiar with the heritage of the name, it looks, you know, it jumps right out at you.
And you've got a new book coming out on January 14th, part of the Eddie LaCrosse series. And the first question I have is LaCrosse named after the town or the game?
I have been nursing that character since I was a senior in high school, and I don't honestly remember how I came up with that last name for him.
So tell me a little bit about Eddie LaCrosse and a little bit about the new book.
Sure. The Eddie LaCrosse series is a high fantasy, like I said, series, but it's written like it was a 40s detective novel. So Eddie is what in that world is called a sword jockey, which is basically a private eye. And in this new book, it starts with him as a much younger man rescuing a baby from being mauled by a bear and making sure that she's safely situated before he leaves. And then 16 years later, he ends up back in the same part of the world and has to once again rescue her from things that were never quite resolved earlier.
And since this is kind of a hard-boiled detective thing, do we get some, Dashiell Hammett, San Francisco street slang mixed in with the high fantasy?
Yes, we do. Yes, we do.
So tell us a little bit about the plot of the new book, which is called He Drank and Saw the Spider.
Well, that's the plot I was just telling you about. It uses a lot of references from Shakespeare. I try to make all of the Eddie LaCrosse books have one core element. Like, I've got a book that's based around Arthurian legends and one book that's based around the ideas of dragons. And this one is based around just pulling odds and ends that I really like from the works of Shakespeare and kind of throwing them into a pile and seeing what happens.
So sometimes writers are solitary creatures. Sometimes I know they gather in packs at workshops and things like that. What do you, assuming maybe you're a little of the latter, what do you think of the writing scene in Wisconsin as compared to Tennessee?
Oh, it's wonderful here. And I'll tell you how different it is. When I was going to send my first novel back to my publisher after going through the edits and everything, I took it into the UPS store. And there was this beautiful girl behind the counter, and I put my envelope down on the counter, and I said, "Yes, I'm here to send my novel back to my publisher." And she, without even batting an eye, said, "Oh, you're the third one today."
So that didn't happen so much in Tennessee.
No, not so much. Not so much.
So I understand also that you're just finishing a collaboration with another writer, and
right.
I saw a little bit of that online. How is it collaborating with somebody else?
Well, I was leery of that, and this was the first time I'd ever done it, but it turned out to be actually very painless. It's a novel called Sword Sisters, and it's a prequel novel to the film Legend of the Red Reaper, which will come out this coming summer. And it's another high fantasy type thing, but it has a very feminist angle to it. And the writer, director, producer, and star of the film is somebody that I've been friends with for a while. And when she talked about wanting to write a prequel novel, I thought I'd probably never get a better chance to see if I could actually make that kind of relationship work or not. And I was anticipating butting heads over, you know, being in somebody else's world and having disagreements, and not to mention writing the book in first person from a 16-year-old girl's perspective. But it turned out to be a breeze. We had no serious disagreements. We finished it in record time, and it's come out. It's out, available now, and it's just a wonderful, wonderful experience.
Alex, we love getting book recommendations for our listeners on this show. If somebody came to you and said, Alex, I'm interested in checking out this fantasy thing, but I don't know much about it. I don't know where to start. Could you give a couple authors or titles that they should seek out?
Well, there's another Wisconsin fantasy author named Kelly McCullough, who has a couple of fantasy series. One, you know, some tend toward science fiction, some tend toward more high fantasy, but I would highly recommend his stuff. There's a wonderful writer named Ekaterina Sedia, who has written probably four or five novels. She's originally Russian, but she lives here and she writes in English. And much like the Norwegian influence here, her influence is all from Russia, and all of the fantasy tropes that she brings in are things that a lot of Westerners have never encountered.
Is that fun, mining these different maybe ethnic heritage types of legends and fantasies to come up with something that's maybe surprising and new to those of us who have maybe just read some Lord of the Rings and whatnot?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's part of the big fun of it, the research.
And what's your take today on sort of publishing and books in general? Are people still reading? Are they still reading what you're writing?
Yes, they are still reading, and I certainly hope they're still reading what I write.
That's part of the plan anyway.
Yeah. The rise of the e-book and the rise of self-publishing are variables that you can't really account for, and you can't really adjust your own approach to things based on that, because I work with what's called traditional publishing, and I'm quite happy with that. And as long as I can do that, I'll keep doing it. I think e-books are fine. I don't care how people read what I write. If they want to, read an e-book, listen to the audiobook, all of that is fine. Self-publishing, I think, is kind of reached a saturation point where I think the consumer, the readers, are starting to see that you got to pay a little more attention to where the books come from, or you're not going to be very happy with what you get.
And Alex, can we expect to see a novel about a beer-guzzling troll coming out of Mount Horeb in a couple years?
Well, now that might happen, yeah. Since you put me on the spot, yeah.
As long as he's a beer-guzzling,
cheese-eating troll, exactly.
Well, we have the brew pub, the Grumpy Troll, here in town.
We were just talking about that a few minutes ago, yeah.
And they serve cheese.
They do.
Well, Alex, thanks so much for joining us today. It's been great.
Well, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
That with author Alex Bledsoe, and we've been talking about his latest book, He Drank and Saw the Spider, which comes out on January 14th.